Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Hit us up there anytime you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. Interact with us. Send us your questions. If you've got a rant to send us, we would love to hear it from you. Questions, concerns, anything you want us to talk about here, send it to us at 331-979-1369. Today is mailbag, so we're going to be doing all those mailbag questions, so that's exactly where you want to send all of your questions. We're going to try to get to as many as possible. Another real quick announcement before we get into everything today on the show. We made a soft announcement yesterday on Twitter that we are looking for Bulls writers, NBA writers, whether you have a ton of experience or you're someone who's just looking for a place to publish, a place to kind of get your name out there. We are looking for talented writers who want to write about the Chicago Bulls and the NBA. So if that sounds like someone you know, or if that's you listening to this show right now, you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com, or you can send Matt or I a DM on Twitter, and Matt at Bulls underscore Peck and me at Jordan C. Malley. Send us an email if you're interested. Please, when you do, if you're interested in this, please send us at least one link to a some work you previously have done. If you don't have any, send us a quick 250 to 500 word article on the Bulls, and we'd love to see it from you. But we're looking for a lot of talented writers to come and join us and build what we're doing here at Locked On Bulls and at FanRag Sports. So I'm excited. So if you want to join our team, make sure you send us an email or DM us on Twitter. Matt, what's going on? How are you doing? Are you excited for all these mailbag questions surrounding guys that potentially are not coming to the Bulls and some draft picks as well?
I'm getting excited. But you know what I'm getting excited for, man, is that draft lottery. May 15th, right around the corner. What is that, like next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday.
I think that's next Tuesday. We're getting close to finally figuring out where exactly that Bulls lottery pick will be, whether it'll be at 6 or hopefully not sliding down if somebody behind them gets lucky. But most likely 6. Who knows? Maybe we'll be able to sneak into that top 3. Getting excited for that. And RIP to the Pelicans and Jazz. Great seasons. Job well done. Very excited for Warriors Rockets. I think that's the conference finals out west that we've all been waiting for, and we got it after last night's series being closed out, both the Pelicans and Jazz bowing out in 5 games. So excited. And hey, we got Celtics Sixers again tonight, seeing if the Sixers can stave off elimination one more night and force a game 6, send it back to Philly. Man, if the Celtics don't close this out tonight in Boston, you got to be thinking they're getting a little nervous. Everybody's talking about this might finally be the time that a team overcomes a 3-0 lead, because the Sixers were really, despite not having home court, the favorites coming into this series. And if they win game 5 in Boston, oh boy, is that pressure on the Celtics.
I think it's kind of a combination of just underestimating that Celtics team, maybe underestimation of Brad Stevens and his coaching ability, and some other guys that decided to really step up for the Celtics team when given the opportunity. You look at Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart when he came back from an injury, and some other guys too, role players that are playing big-time minutes. I mean, you look at a guy that got destroyed all season long, people taunting and saying he's not an all-star in Al Horford, and he is proving every single person wrong right now in this playoffs. He's arguably...
Old man Al is one of the steadiest players in this NBA playoffs.
I was going
right
to say,
now.
He's probably... I mean, you could argue for a handful of guys, but he's been one of the most consistent, one of the most productive players in this playoff so far. Matt, before we get to Bulls evaluations here in this first segment, I just want to quickly touch on one thing that I did hear from post-game from the Warriors. Did you get a chance to hear what Draymond Green had said when a reporter had asked him about whether or not they were looking to play Houston, that they were excited, that they wanted them as much as Houston wanted them? Did you catch this at all?
Yeah, I saw it this morning when I was on Twitter. Basically, based on the headline I saw, said that they don't care about the Rockets. Their goal isn't beating the Rockets. They want to win a third ring. That's basically what Draymond was saying.
Yeah, and I liked it too. Granted, I think it was kind of an idiotic question, to be honest with you. And Draymond Green did as nice as Draymond Green can do, like telling the dude, like, look, I mean, we've won two championships in the last 3 years. We have four of the top 15 players in the NBA right now on this roster. And you think we care about who we play in the conference finals? He's like, our goal is to be here, to be in the NBA finals and to win a championship. We could care less about who we're playing. So to ask us that question, he was like, it's kind of silly and it like doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, I mean,
at the same time, you hope he's not saying that they're looking past the Rockets.
True.
Because, I mean, I feel like Warriors are going to be favored. Even though the Rockets have the one seed, this is the first time I saw this morning, the first time since first round of 2014 that the Warriors will not be starting their a Western Conference playoff series with games 1 and 2 at home. So an adjustment for them to make there. But still, now that the Warriors are healthy, they're the favorite team. And even though I feel like the Rockets might be a bigger test than whoever it is that comes out of the East, for that reason, you can't overlook them. You can't overlook Draymond saying, oh, well, we don't care who we're playing in the Western Conference Finals. We're about winning another championship. Okay, well, really, in all likelihood, your Western Conference Finals is going to essentially be the NBA Finals if you're talking about the toughest competition. Because I don't know if any team out West is going to give them more of a challenge than the Rockets will.
I think it was more so Draymond Green, and like Steph Curry was sitting right next to him too. I think he felt a little bit disrespected in terms of like the reporter basically saying like the Rockets, obviously they have the one seed, so they are the favorite in terms of seeding. But I think the way the reporter had asked the question, I think it took Draymond Green back a little bit. It's like, dude, this is one of the best teams assembled since anybody can remember. And did you also remember we've won two out of the last three NBA finals? And we also have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on our team. Like, I can see from his standpoint, it's like, all right, give us enough respect to where we feel like, you know, we've earned that over the last 3-4 years as a team and as a whole. So I can see where Draymond Green was coming from. I just was, it was an interesting little tidbit from Draymond Green about his outlook on what the Western Conference is going to look like.
Alert the press. Draymond Green feels disrespected. Oh my God.
Oh, wow. All right, let's quickly get to two-player evaluations for the Chicago Bulls before we take a break here. Obviously, these are pretty quick. We've been kind of knocking off, and shout out to you, Matt, for writing up all of these evaluations for some of these guys who are lesser pieces for this Bulls roster, if we're going to be completely honest. But let's touch on two guys real fast. So Ryan Arcidiacono on that two-way contract coming out of Villanova, and also getting the return in the trade of Omer Asik. So I figure we can probably start with Asik first. It's pretty clear that the Bulls have one decision to make with this guy, right? It's either let him be on the roster next season and stay here, pay out that $14 million I believe they owe him for next season, or they if they find somebody that they really like to play and fill in sort of that center position and kind of lock that up, they can stretch that contract over 5 years at, I think, about $2.9 million, $2.8 million over next 5 years. So that's going to be a move that is going to be interesting. I think that's going to depend a lot on the draft. But what for you, what do you think the best move is here? Is it just let's keep him on the roster, let's pay off this contract and be completely off the books by next offseason? Or are you like, okay, if the Bulls are really interested in somebody in free agents or they fall in love with the guy in the draft that plays center, they'll stretch this contract out over 5 years to $2.9 million as part of the cap hit?
Shake and destroy.
Super Bowl from Istanbul. First off, shout out to Omer and to Stacey King, because when we got Omer back in that Nico trade, I was so excited just because, I mean, he was a part of that bench mob in teams that went back to back first place in the Eastern Conference. I loved Omer when he started his NBA career in Chicago. Had some, you know, some unfortunate injuries and things along the way. And then, of course, with New Orleans having Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, their need for him certainly disappeared. So as far as what the Bulls do with Omer, you mentioned the opportunity to stretch his wave him and stretch him, like the stretch wave option. They can do that. You were a little high. It's $11.3 million base salary that he's due next season, which he is under contract for. And then the season following is $11.9, but only $3 million of that is guaranteed, and there is an early termination option in that contract. So the Bulls could waive and stretch Omer this offseason and stretch that remaining dead cap over several seasons. Or they could hold on to him and see if they might find any takers, say, at the deadline of the 2018-19 season, because as a trade chip for a guy whose contract is expiring the following season and is only due $3 million, there might be something to that. As far as on the court, even if he is on this roster next season, I don't see Ashiq being really a big part of that rotation. Robin Lopez is going to be the starter starting next season unless he gets traded this offseason. You still have to work on developing Felicio. As you said, they might add another big in this upcoming draft. So I don't see Ashiq being a part of the plan as far as who is getting minutes for Fred Hoiberg next season. They do have a couple of options as far as how they want to part ways with him. But really, the big reason he's here is that he is the bad contract we had to take to get that first-round pick from the Pelicans. And it was nice to see a friendly face there, but even when the Bulls were tanking and even when they benched Lopez after the All-Star break, Ashiq was still out of the rotation. He played the final four games of the season. It's the only time he got on the court in the Bulls uniform this season, and it's just because the Bulls were running out of bodies at that point. So, like I said, fun to see a familiar face, but you know, the Bulls have a couple of options as far as how they want to move on from Ashiq, but he is not a part of their future plans.
Yeah, I would agree here, and I think I would even take it one step further and say there's no way anybody wants this guy at the trade deadline. Like, let's be honest, the guy hasn't played more than 60 games since 2015, 2016. I know he was dealing with a bunch of different injuries and an illness as well over the last two seasons. Like, at this point, I think...
Well, not trade him to add him as a player, but to trade him because he's a guy who has an early termination clause in a contract and only $3 million guaranteed.
That's true.
So for cap reasons, teams might be willing to take him in some kind of trade with multiple pieces flying around.
So for him, I think that's going to be the decision this summer. So that's kind of up in the air right now. I know he's, like, obviously he's not an important piece to what we're doing here with the future, but I think it's going to be an interesting thing to kind of monitor as far as cap hit and what they decide to do, like we said, with the draft and free agency if they fall in love with somebody. So that'll be interesting. All right, let's get to Ryan Arcidiacono, because this one's interesting. Like, I have to go back and say that I did talk a lot of shit about him at the beginning of the season. I said this was kind of a waste of a two-way contract. I said, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see how this guy can be an NBA player. He's undersized, doesn't score a whole lot often. I know he was a Villanova guy, won a championship with them, all of those things that the Bulls just absolutely love about players. But he surprised me, actually, and I'm not like going completely overboard and jumping ship, because he had a pretty nice stretch of like 4 or 5 weeks at the end of the season where he showed you something. I think the biggest thing with Ryan Arcidiacono is the Bulls will bring him back on a two-way contract again next year because they have a lot of questions at point guard, especially when you've got guard depth that could potentially be injury prone as well. I think keeping him and bringing him back on another two-way deal, because I believe he signed the one-year two-way deal with the Bulls.
Yeah. He was on a one-year two-way.
So I could imagine that they maybe bring him back again, see what they've got in him. I mean, he's like that 120% effort guy we were talking about yesterday when we were talking referencing to TJ McConnell. So I'll just say I was surprised at what his ability to stay with the Bulls and to get more consistent minutes over guys like Antonio Blakeney, who I thought in terms of pure skill is a better player, but it seems like Fred Hoiberg, in terms of running an offense when they needed it most, when guys were riddled with injuries, you look at Chris Dunn, you look at Cameron Payne too as well, and Jerian Grant wasn't getting it done. Arcidiacono had to step up and step in there, and at least he was someone Fred could go to and know that he would be competent enough to run an offense. Nothing moves the needle for Ryan Arcidiacono. He had a better season than I thought he was going to coming into this year. But like I said, again, I think the biggest thing here is the most positive thing for Ryan Arcidiacono is the Bulls bring him back on another two-way deal next year.
Yeah, I mean, I see a roughly 0% chance that they offer him a real NBA contract. They might, as
Absolutely.
You said, bring him back on a successive two-way deal. If they don't find anybody better, you know, who knows? They signed him because they liked what they saw from him in summer league last year. But similarly to, and you mentioned the other two-way guy, Antonio Blakeney, you and I both expressed surprise that Arcidiacono was getting opportunities ahead of Blakeney when the Bulls needed an extra body on that Bulls roster. And I think you might be right in saying that Fred liked him as sort of a more traditional floor general kind of point guard. You look at what he did in the G League this year, and where he was their primary point guard. He averaged nearly 40 minutes a game for the Windy City Bulls in 37 G League games, averaged 13.8 points, so, you know, not exactly a big scorer, but dishing out 8.6 assists per game. So clearly that's what Fred liked about this guy. That's what the Bulls like about this guy. But I agree with you. I just don't really see the NBA ceiling being that high. Heck, I don't even see the NBA floor being that high with Arcidiacono. Maybe, like I said, if they don't find anybody better, maybe undrafted guys that they bring to work out, guys they bring onto their summer league roster, people that they liked at the combine but didn't end up drafting, et cetera, that didn't get drafted by anybody. I mean, maybe that knocks Arcidiacono out of his opportunity to sign another two-way. Because let's remember, this guy's already 24 years old. So it's not like giving him another year in the G League is going to really help him develop as like a young, inexperienced player. At 24, sure. Going on 25, you are the player that you are. And sure, you can get better still from your mid-20s to your prime years of late 20s, early 30s. But I mean, how much would it be really helping Arcidiacono's NBA future to be playing in the G League at age 25?
Yeah.
To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I agree with you, too. And it's like you look at Antonio Blakeney, which is a little bit different of a situation. Antonio Blakeney is, what, 19, 20? He's going to turn 20 years old during this season.
I think he's 21.
Oh, 21. Okay, but, so 3 years
yeah,
younger,
but,
though.
But so still younger.
You look at him, so that's a little bit different. And honestly, just to kind of wrap this up, I would be very, very pissed off if the Bulls offered Ryan Arcidiacono a full NBA contract and decided to just keep Antonio Blakeney on that two-way deal. I think a lot of other Bulls fans would be angry about that. I can understand it. You can still you can still have him develop in the G League. He's on there for 2 years. But to me, like, I would be a little bit irritated not giving Antonio Blakeney for what he did in the G League. I mean, Rookie of the Year, MVP in the G League, and now and then you like give Arcidiacono an NBA contract over him. Not saying that either one is going to get one, because I think that's highly doubtful. But yeah, that would be my only sticking point here. Hey, he's a nice guy. He's got a winner's attitude, but I just don't see it. I just don't see anything here that convinces me that he's going to make even a back end part of this roster.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. Oh, quick note though. Blakeney was the G League Rookie of the Year, but he was not the MVP.
How could he have not been
Lorenzo Brown of the Raptors G League team, Raptors 905. because I just double checked that when I was writing up Blakeney the other day. Yeah, Lorenzo Brown, who averaged 18.8 points, 8.9 assists, and 1.78 steals in 32 games for Toronto's G League team.
He got robbed. I mean, he got had.
Maybe Blakeney got robbed because he averaged 32 points and led the G League in scoring.
32 points per game. That's the single season record for a G League player. Like, how do you not win MVP at that point?
Like when I went to double check that, I was like taken aback. I was like, wait, Blakeney wasn't the MVP?
That's ridiculous.
It's madness.
It is. It's ridiculous. I remember early on in the season last year, he came into the G League and just dropped like 48 on someone, then came back again the next night and dropped 40 and then 42. Like, come on, set the all-time points per game in the G League and he's not going to win the MVP? Get out of here with that. All right, we got
to
take a break.
We need to write to complain.
Right? All right, we got to take a break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're taking all of your questions in this week's mailbag segment. You can send all those to us here at 331-979-1369. Text and voicemail line. You can always send us stuff at Locked On Bulls on Twitter as well. Be back in 60 seconds. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, we're back for this week's mailbag segment. Once again, you can send all of your questions, 331-979-1369, voicemails and text to that line. So if you've got a burning question about the Bulls, maybe you want to hear a conversation talked about, or you want to rant about something, or you have an opinion about the Bulls or anything in the NBA, send it to us over there at 331-979-1369. Matt, kick us off this week. Let's see. We've got a ton of questions to go through, so we're going to try and answer as many as possible with the last 20, 25 minutes of the show. So let's kick it off here.
All right. This one comes to us from Bryce on Twitter, asking about a potential trade. Which guy on the trade block do you foresee getting us the most in return? So I guess that's kind of like a two-part question in A, in your opinion, who is on the trade block, and B, of those guys, who do you think yields the most value for the Bulls? And I assume Bryce is asking about this offseason, so like leading up to draft night, offseason trades.
So is he talking about like in terms of value on the Bulls, or is he talking about like anybody out there that's on the trading block?
I think he's talking about the Bulls.
Okay, so
this is a Bulls podcast, so I'm assuming he's talking about if the Bulls were to trade somebody, who do you see as guys who have been rumored to be on the trading block that are still here, i.e., you know, probably Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday is who he's talking about, those kind of guys. Who do you see getting the most in return if the Bulls do trade them?
Shit, this is a Bulls podcast. I better get out of here. I thought this was a White Sox podcast.
Look alive, Jordan.
To be completely honest with you, obviously the two names that are going to continue to circle until their contracts run out, I think, is obvious. Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, right? Justin Holiday, just because not only can he be a scorer, I think, on a playoff team and help some of these teams. Like, so don't you think Cleveland could have used a guy like Justin Holiday in this playoff already? Like, not getting a whole lot from Rodney Hood. I think we talked about that at the trade deadline when possibly maybe Cleveland was looking to dump some players, to dump some salary. That was sort of a player that we thought maybe we could spin a three-way deal with when they were interested. But yeah, I think Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday are really your two most valuable players in terms of trade value. Now, like we said, like, you got to take that with a grain of salt because the front office has told us. I mean, John Paxson came out and said he really likes Robin Lopez and wants him to be back here next year. It seems like Justin Holiday has meshed himself really well with a lot of the younger guys on this team as well. So I think those are the two guys that you can get the most value for, but I mean, the Bulls have this notion for sticking on and hanging on to guys longer than they should, so I don't know if they make any moves with those guys. But let's be honest, too. Like, if we're looking at anybody on this roster, I think the only person that's really off limits is Lauri Markkanen. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, I guess you're not wrong in saying that maybe LaVine, assuming they bring him back and Dunn, are not off limits if somehow trading either or both of them would yield you, oh, I don't know, say Anthony Davis, then yeah, they're not off limits. But I think...
Or like Kawhi Leonard.
Or maybe to a lesser extent, Kawhi Leonard. But I think other than that, unless you're talking about bringing in via trade a bona fide superstar, then Dunn and LaVine are also off limits in the eyes of the Bulls front office. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just saying I think that's the way they see it right now. They see that core of three and Markkanen absolutely 100% off limits. And other than that, you need a superstar player coming here to send away LaVine and Dunn, because those are the guys you got for Jimmy, so you better be getting a star for him if you send him away. As far as the question from Bryce, as far as biggest trade value in return of the guys that are on this roster and more likely to be traded than, say, Dunn and LaVine, obviously we know how much they value Robin Lopez and his leadership in the locker room. And as good of a player as he is, there's not a huge need, a huge demand on the trade market for traditional, conventional centers, which is what he is. I think a lot of what he does is underrated, and he still, at age 30, is very good. And, you know, $14.3 million on his salary next year is, you know, there are certainly worse contracts for centers out there right now. Holiday, you mentioned, is a guy, you know, who a playoff team like Cleveland could use, certainly. And he is on a very team-friendly $4.3 million next year. Justin Holiday is way too good of a player to be only getting paid $4.3 million next year. So I think maybe he's the guy who might actually yield the most based on, you know, player position of need and team-friendly contract. And also because I think the Bulls would rather keep Lopez around than Holiday. I think they value both of them as far as veteran leaders. But to me, they seem very keen on keeping Lopez. And unless they're getting a first-round draft pick or some young stud prospect, they're not trading Lopez. Like, I would be surprised to see them trade Lopez for a second-round draft pick, you know, coming up to this draft. I just don't see that happening. I don't see that happening with Holiday either. I think if the Bulls are going to move either of those two guys, Holiday might yield a bigger return because of player position and demand on the market and the team-friendly contract. And it would still take a pretty great offer for the Bulls to move him, because they're not going to move him just to move him. We've seen that before from the
Absolutely.
Bulls.
Absolutely. Interesting. One final, just kind of to go off of that question. Do you think Robin Lopez sticks around even if the Bulls get the number one pick, or if they get a top three pick and there's an inclination that maybe they can draft either DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley?
Depends on what kind of offers they get for him. I mean, maybe they might be more inclined to take an offer that they aren't blown away by, but they still feel is fair to clear room in that that depth chart at center. They might be more inclined to take a deal that doesn't knock their socks off if they know, all right, we got the number one pick and we're taking a big. That's certainly in the realm of logic and reason to think something like that. But I still think, even if they, whether it's at one or somewhere one through six, if they take a big, Robin Lopez, he's the guy coming into training camp.
All right, so Matt, this question is kind of bundled together. I want to give it as like a two-parter because it comes from two different people here, one from the 312 and then from our friend Sam out in L.A. The first asks about Melo and if there was any interest in taking on that final year of his deal, if that means getting potentially picks back or some young players on that Thunder roster in return. Also, Sam asks us about Jerami Grant and him being a free agent this summer, being only 24 years old. What do you think about either of those options and whether or not the Bulls would be interested?
Okay, well, let's just get Carmelo out of the way. God no, absolutely not. I'm plunging ice picks into my ears and my eyeballs if the Bulls take on Melo.
Even if you got like the, say, I don't know, a future first round pick and maybe Terrence Ferguson thrown in there.
Yeah, maybe it depends on what kind of protections are on that first round pick, and I mean, I wouldn't want that to be one of those Luol Deng pick situations that just never translates and never translates and never translates. And meanwhile, you just got a grumpy old washed Mello on your roster? Like, God, no. I mean, 28 million next season for Mello.
He's a drama queen, too, to be honest with you.
Such a drama queen. Like, and he just said, it was like, okay, well, that's out of the question, talking about coming off the bench. I'm sorry, buddy, but your good friend D. Wade, after the Bulls paid him to leave, realized that he was not really, you know, someone who had what it took to be a starter in this league anymore. And whether it was in Cleveland or then going back to Miami, came off the bench and said, this is the best way that I can help this team right now. Mello is washed. Mello is going to be grossly overpaid next season. And he's a drama queen who's demanding that he starts. You throw Mello into that Bulls starting lineup, and any cohesion and chemistry that you're trying to build with Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen gets wiped off the table. No, absolutely not. As for Jaren's brother, Jerami Grant, or brother or cousin? The cousins, right? Yeah, because Horace Grant is Jaren Grant's nephew.
No. They're brothers. Jaren Grant.
Okay. All right. There's so many Grants, I get confused.
I know.
But so, I mean, he's a decent player, and he's coming into unrestricted free agency. So the Bulls could certainly talk to him if they want to. He is a wing, like by nature. He could fit into that three spot where the Bulls are really short and shallow right now. And hey, small world. His agent is BJ Armstrong, so there's that
Gross.
Factor. And it would depend to me on what kind of attention he's getting on the unrestricted free agency market. I certainly don't want the Bulls to break the bank for that guy. I wouldn't want them to sign him to something like a 3 or 4 year deal with, you know, somewhere around $10 million per attached to it. And I think that might be kind of like what he thinks he's looking for. So, again, we still won't really know what's happening in this free agent market because everybody's talking about how no teams have money to spend. But who knows what kind of trades might go down on draft night. And then, you know, July 1st hits and chaos ensues. It always does without fail. So he's a name that is certainly intriguing. I think has a brighter NBA future than his counterpart who's on the Bulls right now, Jaren Grant. That's how I feel about that. Mello, absolutely not. I refuse. I will protest in the streets. And Jerami Grant, yeah, sure, but it depends on what kind of offers he's getting elsewhere.
Yeah, understandable about Mello, and I touched on that when I did a solo show last week and just said, like, I don't even think any team is going to even entertain that idea. I feel like between the Thunder and Mello, it's probably going to be a buyout. It's going to be kind of ugly, and I think the Thunder are going to have to pay a ton if they want to buy him out and just completely get him off the roster. I don't see any way that the Bulls should take this on. I think you bring up a good point. I talked about how you could get some assets, some young assets too, but I would be very hesitant, like you said, to toss him in that starting lineup. And then all the chemistry that you built in year one of this rebuild just gets thrown out the window. And then also that...
Right, because it's not like he's a big part of the plan moving forward. You're just taking on the bad contract that people don't want, but he's demanding to start.
Absolutely.
So year two of the rebuild, when you're really trying to find that chemistry, it all gets disrupted because you just got Mello going ISO every other possession. That doesn't help Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine at all. In fact, it does the opposite. It hurts them.
And as far as Jerami Grant goes, 23 years old, the reason why I say probably not is because I think there's going to be a lot of other teams interested in his services. And let's be honest here, man. He came into the league as a three and sort of as a wing player, but if you look over the last two seasons he's played, especially when he's been in Oklahoma City, he's played the majority.
He's not a three-point
shooter. The majority
shooter,
of the minutes at
sure.
power forward too, like the four. He's been playing part of that front court. So like at that point, like you don't have room for that. Like you don't need that. You've got Lauri Markkanen, you've got Bobby Portis. Like the front court is already kind of clogged, and it depends on who they take in this draft as well. So to me, it just. I mean, like, I know I don't want to sound like we're sounding like every idea that people are floating out there is a automatic no. I'm just like trying to be realistic in telling you that as much as like these scenarios keep going out there and who the Bulls should maybe go after, if there's young, exciting, maybe potentially interesting talent out there.
If they don't fit, they don't fit.
Exactly.
And you know, Jerami Grant's a decent young player, but what the Bulls desperately need, a 3-and-D wing. And as you mentioned, he's been playing more minutes at the four. He's kind of like a small forward slash power forward, and he can't shoot the three. He's a career 30% three-point shooter coming off a season where he shot 29%. And he only takes 1.5 per game. That's not what the Bulls are missing right now. Is that, like, what the Bulls need is a three who can actually shoot the three. That's really not Jerami Grant's strength as an NBA player.
He's a pretty solid defender, too. But like you said, he only played 17% of his minutes at the small forward position this year for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's about 1,600 minutes he's played for them this year. And that could be a cause because of Paul George being there. So I don't really know. Other than that, yeah, I think he's a good defensive player, but I think he's going to command some decent money here. And that's, I think, goes back to the main point here is the Bulls aren't going to spend a whole lot of money this offseason. Like, let's be honest here. Unless they are completely blown away by somebody that they think, you know, could be a game changer here, I just don't see it, especially with some of the guys on cheap deals that they have that they can bring back and sort of just piecemeal together for another season. And the importance really is the core and not some of these other guys that they're trying to add to. That's why we keep saying like 2019 is really when the conversation is going to pick up about guys and who the Bulls should continue to add here. And I would even push that out to 2020 is when the Bulls should get really aggressive. So I think we're still at least a year from talking about picking up young, spendable talent in guys like Jerami Grant.
To that end, let's move on to our next question, because that's a solid transition, talking about being at least a year away from trying to spend big in free agency. This one comes from Jeff on Twitter. Should we start working towards the 8th seed or be on the tank year 2? Thanks for the question, Jeff. Jordan, your thoughts.
So this is interesting, and I know I touched on it. I touched on it probably
sort of a big picture.
Yeah, I touched
question.
On it probably about like at the end of the season when we were talking about it in April. And I asked you too. I was like, am I crazy to think that when all these guys are healthy and out there, if the Bulls bring back pretty much 90% of this roster and then you add that number six pick, potentially could be a top three pick, we'll see on Tuesday. But then you add another first round or two in the Pelicans pick. Like I said, these guys played hard for Fred Hoiberg this year. And even without Nico in there, the Bulls in stretches still played a lot of teams really hard. I think your goal, anytime you're talking about young players, you don't set really a bar in terms of, oh, well, we don't want to make the playoffs. It's not what you tell the players. But I think if you're just looking from a fan standpoint and from a managerial standpoint, I think the Bulls are going to go out there, try to develop these guys in year two and let the chips fall where they may. If they end up being an eighth seed in the playoffs, like that's, I think, a little bit of a step ahead of where we thought the Bulls would be. That would be a little bit of an acceleration to this rebuild. But let's be honest, I think there's a lot of other teams that could play around with this idea, especially a lot of young rising teams in the East. So to me, I think the important goal here is just develop your three core guys in LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen, and then whoever you bring in with that lottery pick as well. I think that is the most important part, and wins and losses really aren't a big factor for me in year two. They weren't a factor for me in year one. So I think I'm really looking at 2019 as when I'm looking at the win and loss column. I just want these guys to stay in games. Like if they can battle and stay in games with some of the top talent and show us that they've got some fight and the development is continuing there, like that's all I'm asking for in 2019. So I guess I would say I'm not going to put really a bar on it. If they make the playoffs and they are trying to battle for that eighth seed, good for them. And that just means that the young players are actually developing, playing well, and things are going well.
Yeah. So the key word in Jeff's question is should. Should the Bulls be going after the eighth seed and getting back to the playoffs, or should they be going for tank year two? Because that's, you know, as opposed to the what are the Bulls doing? Are the Bulls going for tank year two, or are they going to try to compete and get back to the playoffs? Because that answer is very simple. According to John Paxson, they are finished tanking. He didn't say the tanking word, but he essentially said at his end-of-season press conference, we don't want another season like this. It's tough to get through seasons like this. We do not plan on doing it again. So the Bulls, by all accounts, are aiming to get back to being a competitive team that is fighting to make the playoffs next season. Should they be doing that? It's tough. It really is tough to wonder if the core that they have now plus whatever whoever they add with 6-22 is going to be good enough to push them out of the basement and closer to NBA relevance in the Eastern Conference, and then at least good enough to, as we were talking about in one episode last week, actually, and as you were just saying, draw attention of some big name free agents who see the potential of the young core as, if I join this team, we can be legit contenders. Because those are sort of like steps two and steps three of this rebuild. Get the young guys looking good. Get them looking good enough to convince a in-their-prime star to come play with them, right? I don't know. I'm not convinced yet that the Bulls have enough to really be exiting the tank and going for it next season. The 2019 draft class, if you're talking about should the Bulls be tanking to add another top-level lottery pick, is not quite as highly touted as the 2018 class, but then every draft class rolls around, people get stoked about it, and there are names there. You know, we mentioned the kid Romeo Langford, who committed to your Hoosiers in a recent episode. There's Zion Williamson, who is a freak of nature. There's Manute Bol's son, Bol Bol. There's talent in that 2019 draft class, and I think it certainly wouldn't be a bad thing if the Bulls added another one of those pieces in the lottery. Another factor is that they're changing up how that draft lottery works starting in the 2019 draft lottery. So maybe the Bulls are not quite there and show strides next season, still end up just missing the playoffs and in the lottery somewhere, and because of the new NBA draft lottery rules, actually have a better shot as an outside, you know, bottom half lottery team of still adding some talent in that 2019 draft class. So it's a tough question, the hypothetical of should they be tanking or should they be competing. Right now it's hard to know. I think if you look at it just bare bones, they don't look like they're ready to compete yet next season. That would be my take. And then thus, yeah, go back and tank again and try to add another top-tier pick in the draft in 2019. However, we have all heard from Paxton already that that's not the plan.
Just looking at the Eastern Conference, too, and like, obviously you want them to battle and you want these young guys, and it would be kind of nice to get them a little bit of a playoff experience, even if it is a first-round exit. I don't think I'm more so concerned about where the Bulls would land as far as the tank next year, as far as where the lottery plays out next year, because there are a lot of teams that are way worse than what the Bulls have constructed right now. And so you look at the Eastern Conference too, which is trash. I mean, think about all the games that the Bulls lost by 8 points or less this season. And you think about the 27 wins that they put up this year, especially late, like, You flip six or seven of those wins around. The Bulls are a 35-win team, 36-win team. So I think the biggest thing here is, like, if I have a goal set there, whether they should be competing or they should go for the tank, if I had to choose one or the other, for me, I would rather see them compete for the basis that you just said, that this lures the eyes of big-time free agents. Like, big-time all-star free agents don't want to come to a place that has a whole roster of no playoff experience. So I think that's part of the factor, too, of like a lot of these all-stars in 2019, 2020 that are going to be free agents, and even down the road, 2021, a lot of those guys want to see teams that are making the playoffs and are, what, one piece away, two pieces away, to really take them over the top. So I think being exposed to the playoffs isn't bad, but, you know, I'm not going to say it's the end-all, be-all if they don't end up in the eighth seed or if they fall out to the lottery. So I think, to me, I feel like it's a pretty solid position in terms of if you want the Bulls to be competitive relatively soon, and what the front office is saying in terms of what you said, like, the tank is over. It'll be interesting. It's going to be a weird sort of unprecedented season in terms of not really knowing what's going to happen. I think if Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine all take another step, I think this Bulls team's probably going to be somewhere between a 35 and a 38 win team. And that's good enough to just miss the playoffs in terms of this year. Like, you look at the Pistons at 39 and 43, they were the ninth seed. And that eighth seed was 43 and 39. So it's going to depend. And also a big factor too, I think, is whether or not LeBron leaves and some of these other guys in the Eastern Conference, whether they shuffle teams and what some of these other teams decide to do. So, that's a really good question. And I don't really have 100% of the answer right now. But yeah, I think it's going to be definitely interesting in 2019 here.
As you just said, it's a tough question to answer right now. And there's, you know, I think the Bulls are kind of somewhere between a team that should be tanking and a team that should be trying to compete, because we saw some glimpses this past season of them looking much better than the other teams that were tanking. And there will be teams, especially in the East, that are worse than the Bulls next year. So even if they tried to tank next year and said, all right, we're going to try to stick through and be bad another year, sort of, you know, Philly style, trust the process and add another top tier lottery pick, they probably wouldn't have much success trying to tank if they assume, and we're assuming healthy seasons and full minutes for Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine, they wouldn't really have a whole lot of success tanking.
Look at this year, too. They struggled to tank this year.
Yeah.
Like, they were picking up wins that we didn't want them to, and then now you're going to add two first-round picks, too, in a second year in the league for Lauri Markkanen and some of these other guys.
Eighth seed next season might be a bit of a lofty goal. We'll see. Maybe it's not, given how bad the Eastern Conference is. I think they're probably a little bit closer to realistically being middle of the pack, you know, reaching for the 6, 7, and 8 seeds than they would being a team that's trying to be one of the worst teams in the league next season.
All right, this one comes from the 919. It says, if the Bulls draft a wing with their pick, then how do you guys feel about going after Nerlens Noel? He has the potential to be a good rim protector and a pick and roll player, but he hasn't played well enough to command a big deal. The one short and sweet thing that I said about this is, man, like, yeah, Nerlens Noel was a top pick and he's bounced around a couple places, and Dallas thought they were going to get to be able to revitalize him in terms of coming off an injury and be able to develop him. I think the biggest question that surrounded him is his interest in basketball overall, and like his work ethic too, I think, has been in question for a long time. And maybe that comes from being a top pick and then being injured and having the success he did in college. And that just kind of comes sometimes with guys feeling like they're owed something. I think that's the biggest thing, is like they've complained about his lack of interest in basketball. And I think also too, the health concerns are big for me as well. He's got to be healthy first. So I'm not trying to throw any big money at a guy like Nerlens Noel. I think it's an interesting and intriguing option, but I think the concerns there outweigh his potential, for me at least. And I don't want a guy that's going to come into this locker room and be disinterested and screw up like we talked about.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Concerns outweigh the potential. You also, I mean, we didn't even mention the fact that he got suspended
right towards
the end of the regular season for violating the league's anti-drug policy. So there's that to consider. There's, as you said, the work ethic and the fact that even as the person posing this question said, if they take a wing as opposed to a big in the draft, maybe going after Noel, you know, even if you don't add a big at 6 or 22, you still have Lauri Markkanen and Bobby Portis. And those are the guys that I really want the Bulls to be developing right now. I don't want them to be bringing in Nerlens Noel and paying him some, you know, stupid amount of money, tying up money on Noel that they could be using to putting to better use in 2019 if he's going to be a problem in the locker room and a guy who hasn't really put forth that much on the court through. I mean, he was a rookie in 2014-15 and has only played, you know, just a shade over 200 games through the first four seasons of his career. So I just, you know, I don't see it. All right, Jordan, let's do one more before we get out of here. This one comes from Mike at the 630.
Shout out to the 630.
I'm a 630 too, buddy.
Let's go.
For all this talk of the Bulls core three, I feel like the most important thing in this draft is to get another starter pair with Lowry. If they decide to go with a big, so sort of reverse of the previous question, do you think they might trade up to a top three by packaging their own lottery pick, the Pelicans pick, and possibly a Bobby Portis or David Nwaba? I personally feel they'd be better off. Thanks for the question, Mike. First off, let's get something straight. They'd have to do a sign and trade with Nwaba because Nwaba is a restricted free agent this summer. So they couldn't just trade him as is right now. My opinion on this is pretty brief. That to me sounds like a lot. Their own pick, the Pelicans pick, and sacrificing Bobby Portis, who's still under another year of a rookie team control deal and will be a great value next season, and assuming they bring back Nwaba just to trade him, sacrificing Nwaba or Portis along with your own pick and the Pelicans pick is a lot to move up, what, three spots? And I think there are still a lot of uncertainties and plenty of non-guarantees as far as who these guys that are going top six are going to be. So, you know, even if the Bulls really think that they want a big as opposed to a wing, I to me, moving up three spots, it's not like the Bears moving up to really get their future franchise quarterback in Mitch Trubisky in last year's NFL draft. If you think that's your guy to be your franchise quarterback for the next 10 or 15 years, and you really need to move up from spot three to spot two to make sure you get that guy, fine. To me, there is nothing close to that level of urgency, and this is the guy in this draft. I just don't see it with any of them.
I'm with you. If Phoenix gets that number one pick, there's like even if they're in the top two or the top three, whatever it is, I don't see them trading down. They just signed their new head coach who coached Luka Doncic in Eurobasket. So there's that obvious connection there. So I don't see them trading out of there. Memphis is a dumpster fire with what's going on with Marc Gasol and some of these other guys that they've got locked up long term, and Mike Conley and even Chandler Parsons. So I don't see them moving out of that either. I mean, they played so terrible this year that they want the ability to bring in a young superstar that maybe some of these other guys can help them train. Dallas as well. Dallas, I mean, has a couple young, nice pieces. Dennis Smith Jr. They also have got Harrison Barnes there and a few other guys, but I don't see them trading down either. Like, none of those teams are at a point where they're like, okay, if we can get a couple, we can get some value for it, it's worth trading down, because I feel like we can take that next step as a team as a whole. So to me, I don't see it. I don't see a team wanting to trade down in terms of what's available in the top three. I just, none of those three teams to me, I feel like, would want to trade down. And you're right too. I think that's a whole hell of a lot to give up.
To move up, to move up like two or three picks, giving up your own lottery, the Pelicans pick, and a young promising player like Bobby or Nwaba, to me, that's an insane price to pay to move up two spots,
like,
or three
spots.
It's
not a break. It's no secret. Like, if you could tell me and sit here and tell me that either DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic is going to be a 10-time All-Star, like, if you could tell me that before the draft, sure, I'll give it all up. But everybody
exactly
would do that.
If it's LeBron frickin' James, and you know that if you trade up a few spots and have to sacrifice two picks and one of your own promising players, but then you're going to get LeBron frickin' James, then yeah, that's a trade that you make. But with all the uncertainties around the guys projected to go in this top six, absolutely not. Way too high of a price to pay, and I guarantee you the Bulls front office feels the same way.
One last thing just to kind of touch on that. I would say I think the Bulls would be more likely to trade down than they would be likely to trade up. Think about it. If they're at number six and they feel like they aren't 100% sold on Michael Porter Jr. or somebody else that maybe they think is going to go ahead of them.
Or Bamba or Bagley or whoever, yeah, with a big that's left on the board. And they like some of the wings in the mid-rounds. Is that where you're going with this? Yeah, maybe trade down.
Yeah, like Mikal Bridges, like even if, like, think about it. If Cleveland wants to move up a couple spots, you could find a deal to work out with Cleveland. I don't know who else you could get in there as far as like a, I mean, you could ask them for a guy like Jordan Clarkson or Larry Nance Jr. or something like that, another young piece to add sort of that to move back two spots. That makes some sense. Like, and Mikal Bridges might be still around there, and then there you go. You get your wing, and then you get to keep your late first-round pick on top of that. So I think there's more moves and more things that make sense for the Bulls to move down rather than for the Bulls to move up, if that makes sense.
I wouldn't disagree with that as far as an opportunity of what's there. But I would also say I would be surprised to see the Bulls move down, because they fought through this ugly rebuilding season, you know, number one, the tank year, and they are excited about that lottery pick. And even if they don't feel, you know, fantastic about, you know, say they do really want a wing and they end up like taking Mikal Bridges there and they feel like maybe he's not quite worth that, if they like him that much, they won't risk trading down and maybe losing out on him. I think that the Bulls know that they need to add a stud player in this draft, and depending on who's on that board, if they are at six and how that shakes out, they're going to take the best player available at that spot.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, have a wonderful midday hump day for you Bulls fans out there. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces. Anywhere he can't start.
Gross.
To go on top of that, what do you think about Jeremiah Grant? He's going to be a free agent this summer.
You mean Jeremy Grant?
Is it Jeremy?
It's Jeremy. It's not Jeremiah.
Hold on. 1 second.
Jeremy was a bullfrog.
Is that really how you pronounce his name?
It's,
wow. Yeah, it's Jeremy. I am a dumb fuck. Holy shit. I am just like on a streak this week of not being able to say anything and getting all my facts wrong. Holy shit.
Yeah, Jeremy. Jeremy.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.